I'm hungry for watermelon.
We had a couple of those over the last weeks, too. And just something I cannot figure out. I've said it before. If we could figure out how to have the insulation value of a watermelon and apply that to our homes, we would have incredibly well-insulated homes. You can pick a watermelon. You were talking about the heat during the break. Mm-hmm. And, you know, not only do you guys have to... director of food safety, but you also have, you know, human safety and guys out in the field and they're, you know, walking acres a day, picking the watermelons. It's a pretty big workout. You got to bend over, pick it up, throw it up to the guy who's stacking them in there. You know, you got to keep the guys hydrated. And, mm-hmm.
They're buff at the end of the summer is what we're going to say. So talk a little bit about that, because I thought some of that was fascinating. The cutters and the pickers and the...
You can cut a watermelon in the heat of the summer and it's still cool inside.
Yes.
Mm-hmm. With no air conditioning. If we could figure out how to make our homes as well insulated as a watermelon, we'd have some pretty incredible homes.
Yeah, so it's quite the, like I was saying, we do about 1,000, 1,100 tons a day. And so just to put that in perspective, you have the, you know, the bins of watermelons you see in the store that you can pick out of, you know, that's about 2,500 to 2,800 that we're producing every day. So each one of those watermelons is cut and then it's just kind of laid over. And then there's a team of pitchers or pickers that...
Now, it's not 2,500 watermelons a day.
No,
it's bins. It's 2,500 bins full. Yep.
Correct.
Of watermelons.
Yep. And then, and then those have to be pitched. And so they're picked up from the ground and kind of pitched over about five different guys and then put into a trailer. And then those are shipped to the packing shed. And then each one of those watermelons are then unloaded onto a packing line, and then it's sorted by weight. So when you see in a Costco or a Fry's, those are all by count. There's a 45 count watermelon bin, or a 36 count watermelon bin is a bigger one that you would find in Costco. So,
and I don't know if this came off of Russo Family Farms, but I was looking for a video during the break and I haven't found it yet. But it's men harvesting watermelons and they're mm-hmm. pitching it one-handed. The mm-hmm. guy in the field picks it up with two hands, chucks it, and there's three guys in line, and they all one-handed just
yep.
throw
some
it
of
up
them get that, yeah. And depending on the size of the watermelon, you can probably do that pretty easily with a 10-pound, but some of those 20-pounders are a little more difficult. And then yesterday, the guys brought me a 50-pound watermelon on my desk, and
yes.
It was, like, crazy. Last year, we only had, like, a 40-pound, I think, was the biggest they brought in. But
50 pounds.
Yeah, think about how many.
So, obviously, there's a lot of things that, and this even ties into food safety for your workers, but you've got shade for them. There's plenty mm-hmm. of Gatorade and everything else for hydration. Mm-hmm. Sometimes they'll pick a watermelon and they can consume that because of the nutritional value and mm-hmm. the hydration. But at the end of a given day, how many acres have they walked?
It just depends, but sometimes it's 20, 30 acres that they walk. Sometimes it's a little more if we're in like a field of a third cut, so the watermelons are kind of spaced out more. But yeah, so they've walked a lot, and there's a lot of breaks obviously involved in that. And then, like you said it best, we have, you know, Gatorade and break areas, shade areas, and they're hydrating and eating right. And we're constantly like monitoring them and make sure, but the... Yeah, it's tough work. They're doing it's very tough work.
So we have to appreciate our watermelons on this wonderful 4th of July. God bless
yes.
America, because of what it took not only to grow it, but to harvest it, to logistically get it to the stores where we want it. And yes, mm-hmm. we can show up at a farm stand and a lot of our farmers markets here in Arizona on this wonderful 4th of July weekend. And a lot of those watermelons are coming from Russo Farms.
Yeah, they are. We have a lot of farmers markets in the area that are customers right now. So they come and pick up the sweet corn or watermelons and then sell it at their various places around the valley, and which is nice because it gets our produce everywhere that people can enjoy. So people in Gilbert don't have to come out to the West Valley to
right.
see our market. So, yeah, it's great.
So you have
seed or seedless?
We're seedless. We have grown lots of seeded in the past, and it's just the seedless is the thing now. It's just convenient, especially for moms.
What are you supposed to spit at your sibling?
I know.
I know. But it makes it easier for mom to cut it up for you and not have all those black seeds in them. So it's just kind of the direction everyone's gone. And I think the varieties that we have now, sometimes people are like, oh, I think the seeded tastes better. I think the seedless is really, when you get a, you know, the
when you
right
get a
water,
good,
you're,
with
it's,
the, what,
competes
now,
very closely, the, if not better.
The number of bricks and the premium is 11.5 bricks, which is, you're identifying the sugar content,
mm-hmm.
basically.
Yes.
Okay.
Yeah.
And so if it's a Russo watermelon, we know that's going to
yes,
happen.
Yes.
So talk about some of the, you did identify the different crops that the Russo farming company does grow. But in the summer, we can be pretty confident, certainly here in the valley, that it's either going to be watermelons, sweet corn, any other summer crops?
There's squash a lot of people have. We are growing kind of squash for our markets right now, and then we do green chilies as well, and we're roasting them. Yeah, there's a couple of farms in the valley that have tomatoes that we kind of trade out with too, that are in season. But yeah, that's pretty much I think the majority.
Yeah, and okra is a summer crop. Mm-hmm. In fact, if somebody's curious, if you've forgotten off the top of your head, what are some of the currently available summer crops here in Arizona, just go to fillyourplate.org because we have that little seasonal chart on that website, and it's real easy. You can either look at the list, or there's an infographic for the four seasons here in Arizona. But I'm like you, I love summer crops. There's especially our melons are so refreshing. Obviously, they have high water content, our watermelons. But one of the things I wanted to highlight with our cantaloupe here in Arizona, our season for that is kind of unique because we actually have two. We have a beginning cantaloupe season. They're growing and harvesting in Yuma right now, I believe, for mm-hmm. the cantaloupe. And that's kind of springtime. But they also have a fall crop of cantaloupes.
Right.
So
yeah,
talk a little bit more about that.
We actually, I failed to mention, we grow cantaloupes too, but it's just on a lot smaller scale. So I'm always focused on watermelons. But yeah, so you're correct. Right now is really cantaloupe season. And then it'll wind down and you can also do a fall a cantaloupe season. It's same thing with, you know, sweet corn. We have the fall sweet corn season right before like Halloween, basically, to just before Thanksgiving. We can do that again.
Some stats we had posted from a previous broadcast when we talked about melons. Arizona has 28% of the cantaloupe value and 30% of the honeydew.
The rest is most likely coming from California, I think.
Yeah.
But
probably, but yeah. Still 30% of the total value yep. to the U.S., that's pretty significant. And, you know, I don't know what the land size comparison to California. I know Arizona's 113 square miles. I have no idea what California is, but by ratio, that's probably pretty.
It's very significant for the size of our state and the limitations we have on land because so much of our land is federal, state, and tribal. So when you realize what we do on the limited acreage that we have. And then the other point of that is a lot of our land is not really available. It's not good for farming. It's good for grazing cattle. But I think, my ranchers will correct me on this if I'm wrong, but I think rangeland-wise, or land that's available to our cattle through the federal, state, and tribal leases is something like 73-74% of land that we can use for agriculture. So then the balance of that agriculture land is for crops. But the other thing I wanted to ask you about, Cammie, because I know you'll know as Director of Food Safety, we actually have been looked at on a national scale because of the impressive food protocols that we have in place, hence directors that are managing to make sure that your food safety protocols are in place. Talk a little bit about that. Why is even the federal government has looked at our system and said, okay, they're doing it right?
Yeah. Well, I think just experience with the types of crops we grow, leafy greens, and we have a lot of great food safety professionals, especially in Yuma, that, you know, our growers work with the growers. And so I think their involvement in developing the California and Arizona LGMAs, or leafy green marketing agreements, you know, just lends itself to the federal government looking at those programs. So now we have the produce safety rule in place, and a lot of the leafy green guidances were already well above the produce safety rule. It's been a neat process, and it's nice that Arizona's, you know, at the forefront of that and involved in that. And we have a lot of great food safety professionals in the state.
And for others to be looking at us doesn't mean that we should rest on our laurels. We're always trying to figure out ways to operate and improve our practices. Is that one of the reasons why the leafy green?
Yeah, I think a lot. We have the University of Arizona and the Cooperative Extension. There's a lot of research that is going on to kind of determine where some of these outbreaks are coming from, and just that collaboration between industry and research and academic individuals, I think really lends itself to, you know, Arizona
doing it, right?
Yeah.
So I'm going to put you on the spot, and you don't have to name all 15, but I think under this leafy greens agreement, there's 15 crops. Can you name at least a majority of them?
Oh, you are putting me on the spot. I mean, iceberg, lettuce, or romaine. We got arugula, spinach, radicchio, cabbage.
Broccoli.
No, broccoli's not one.
Okay.
Yeah.
It has food safety practices in place for it, but it's not under the
agreement. So it's not under the protocol. Arizona leafy green marketing agreement. Yeah, so it's just lettuce and leafy greens.
Why did they happen to pick, and they're all leafy greens, they're all grown here in Arizona and California? I know they didn't come to it randomly.
No, I think, I mean, just by definition, what lettuce and then leafy greens are kind of just what the commodities
what they
are,
kind of brought together, because and these are not just our farmers but our shippers. These are a lot of them have signed on to the agreement saying we are going to, because we want to create a baseline across the industry to support food safety. So it's your farmers, it's your shippers. They've all come together in this agreement. And then how long has it been in existence?
Since 2007.
Okay. Mm-hmm. So there's a lot of commitment
history
to that.
There. Yeah. And it's changing. We're looking through our soil amendment guidance and our metrics and adjusting and our adjacent land use. So it's just kind of this routine or changing schedule that we go through all the different issues and then update them.
And, you know, for our Arizona families, we might not always realize how important these things are, but I think it's really good for us to kind of share for our listening audience so that they understand there's a serious commitment in the industry to this.
Right. We eat these commodities, these vegetables that we grow every single day. We want them to be nutritious and healthy and safe. And we are committed to the safety of them and making sure that we're doing everything in our power to make sure we get safe vegetables to everyone.
That's awesome.
And my wandering mind had to take a little bunny trail. Arizona is 114,000 square miles. California is 164,000 square miles. So by ratio and land mass, we overproduce on melon if that other 70% does come from California.
So there we go. I mean, my numbers
We way outperform California on the melon production.
On a lot of things, actually. But definitely on
a lot of things.